is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The U.S. economy, the global economy, they're mixed up right now. Questions about China, certainly the war in Europe. But there's one thing that they have in common, inflation. And I welcome Elizabeth Peake, a columnist at The Hill, columnist at Fox News, often on Fox Business, to comment on the ECB and the Federal Reserve, both tasked now to solve the price instability, a.k.a. inflation, that is a product of having ignored the warning signs in 2021. Liz, a very good evening to you. The ECB now is challenged by the highest inflation, I don't know, pick your number of decades, 40, 50 years. 10.7% was the number over year. That actually exceeds what we're witnessing in the U.S. in the eights. However, both the European Central Bank, led by Christine Lagarde, and the Federal Reserve, led by Jerome Powell, have the task to cure it. And the answer so far has been jumbo hikes. The Federal Reserve is now meeting. Is there any indication to you that they will continue to do these jumbo hikes, at least for this next meeting? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, I think the expectation is that, yes, they will raise rates 75 basis points. That's sort of baked in the cake. This is the Fed we're talking about this week. I don't think anyone is particularly doubting that. The big question mark is what next, and what will be the signal from Jerome Powell about the December hike, John? And I think Wall Street has been very bullish recently on the idea that we're nearing peak rates, that the rate of increase at least will slow, and that December will see only a 50 basis point hike. I think the job for the Fed is almost impossibly difficult right now, because in the next couple of days, Powell has to indicate to investors, to financial leaders everywhere, that he is absolutely dedicated to stomping out inflation. But at the same time, he has to give markets some optimism that we are not going to be hiking rates into a really serious downturn, because estimates of what GDP growth will look like next year are very bearish. Most people are looking for a recession. 0% growth rate is what Ed Hyman at ISI is talking about next year, but that includes two down quarters. That is not at all outside the mainstream. So, you know, I hope that he reiterates his commitment to hiking rates enough that inflation remains under control, because the risk is if he backs off for political reasons or whatever and begins to sound more dovish and more take a more wait and see attitude, I think that could spur inflation expectations. And as we all know, markets are driven not just by reality, but also by expected reality. And one of the things the Fed had to do this summer was to get consumers and investors in the mindset that, yeah, we're going to be tough. We're going to be tougher than expected. And remember how markets swooned when he made those remarks. I think it's very dangerous for him to come out in this meeting and say, you know, yes, we're going to taper the size of increases, which some people have called for, even some Fed governors have called for, because we don't want the economic damage to be too great. It's really a difficult situation, because next week we also have a midterm election. Jay Powell has shown himself, I think, to be not immune to political pressures, and Democrats are certainly all over him to sound a little more optimistic and, you know, basically allow stock markets to continue to increase as they were during the past month. That's not exactly what they come out and say, but the last thing they want going into an election is real bloodbath sell-off, such as we've seen a couple of times when Jay Powell reiterated his commitment to fighting inflation. So, long story, but the truth is they'll raise it tomorrow or the next day, 75 basis points, they'll announce that, and probably say, I assume, that December will depend on the data, and I think it will be, I think he's going to have to stay pretty tough, but, you know, we'll see.
The gasoline prices don't show any risk, any cutback, any hesitation because of the Federal Reserve moves so far. The grocery prices don't show any hesitation. In addition, the job market is softening is an exaggeration here. There is indications that it is no longer expanding. However, the Federal Reserve knows that driving this is the price of energy. The Federal Reserve knows this, that driving this is the demand for wages because of the job market, because of the ability of the employees to negotiate with the employer. Where is it that the Fed can find a reason, oh, we're going to slow down now? Where do they find it? In this magical data report that we're going to get in mid-November? Is that going to do it, Liz?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the question, right? If a lot of the drivers of inflation are really not directly impacted by higher interest rates, and energy obviously is one where there's a pretty tenuous connection, what good does it do to drive the economy into a recession? Well, it does dumb down demand, and we've seen how high gasoline prices, do cause drivers to drive less, demand goes down, and sure enough, gasoline prices come down too. It's a commodity. If there's a little less demand, they will soften. In terms of wages, there is enough, what do you want to call it, sort of weakening around the edges of the job market right now, that wage demands are not, according to CFOs, they're not quite as robust as they were. We'll see if that continues. I mean, I think there's a lag there where, particularly with organized labor, that they kind of are a little late getting to incorporating current inflation data into their wage demands. We'll see. I mean, that I think will play out over the next several months. But this is the issue. What have we really achieved with the interest rate hikes that we've seen? What we really achieved, John, is driving the housing sector into recession. That is absolutely a done deal. Housing starts are down, demand is down, house prices are down. It's a very, very bad contraction in a pretty big segment of the economy. That will show up in the consumer price index, probably not in the next couple of months, but certainly in 2023, we're going to see that very large housing component, which is about 30% of the CPI, we'll begin to see that go down, without a doubt. Are there other segments of the economy that are also suffering? Not apparently autos. Auto sales seem to be holding up quite well, even though certainly payments on car loans have to be going up. You know, the consumer, which is sort of the question mark, always has been for months, the consumer still seems to be spending. Consumers, and that is a reflection of pent-up savings, a lot of relief money that came out, and a very strong jobs market. So the consumer has not yet buckled. So the question is, how much worse do interest rates have to get before credit card debt and other kinds of debt really impacts consumer spending? I don't know the answer to that. My guess is the Fed's pretty furiously trying to figure out the answer to that question, because if the consumer just doggedly keeps spending through the holiday season, the Fed is going to have to be commensurately aggressive in terms of continuing to hike rates. All the excitement in the stock market over the last couple of weeks has been the expectation that Jay Powell was going to come out in the next 48 hours and say calming things about rate hikes. If he doesn't, John, I worry very much what the reaction on Wall Street is going to be.
The comments in the White House, however, also complicate this matter about energy prices. President Biden threatened on Monday, I'm going from the New York Times report, to seek a new windfall profits tax on major oil and gas companies unless they ramp up production to curb the price of gasoline at the pump. A windfall tax on major oil producers now in this Congress, Liz, it's not realistic. And yet we need to review. The reason that companies are making lots of money has to do with energy policy, not because they've raised rates. It's a global price, correct? They can't control the global market.
That's correct. They are making a lot of money right now because oil prices are up. And one of the reasons that oil prices are up is that the United States production did fall post-2019 from a peak of about 13 million barrels a day to 11 million barrels a day, actually in a few months less than that. And they're now gradually increasing. But this idea that Joe Biden could possibly impose a windfall profits tax is so nonsensical. Everybody knows it is, and everybody also knows that it is not something that's going to happen, as you say, either in this Congress or heaven knows in the one that I think will be delivered to him next week. That's just off the table. So I must say, I thought it was really offensive that the president kind of went back to this thing about how oil companies are price gouging and taking advantage, war profiteering, I think was the language that he used. The truth is Exxon lost $22 billion in 2020. These companies are commodity companies. They do well when prices go up. They do badly when prices go down, as it did in 2020. Joe Biden was not there at 2020 offering Exxon a bailout. So it's a little ridiculous that he is so offended that they're doing very well right now. In terms of reinvestment, they have been reinvested. We are drilling. It's just that it has been severely constrained by a number of policies that the Joe Biden White House has put in effect. There's just no denying that. Increased charges on methane emissions, increased taxes on all kinds of various expenses and so forth. There's no question that this is an anti-fossil fuel White House. They've done everything possible to impress people with that, and it's had an impact. Canceling the Keystone Pipeline was one of the first things Joe Biden did. That would have been 800,000 barrels of oil flowing into our refining sector. Does he not take any responsibility for that? The answer is no. So, it's a ludicrous argument. He's gone there too often. The good news is Americans know it. They actually blame him for high gas prices, and they're right.
One more detail. BP reports this morning that it's going to use its profits. It's going to pay a huge tax bill because it's made a lot of money, but it's going to use them to buy back shares. And Liz, you've taught me the reason that buy back shares is an alternative for BP is that future investment is not commensurately profitable because of the limitations, the regulations, and the vicissitudes of global policy, national policy. And BP, that's a UK firm, so it's the same problem. They're talking windfall tax in London as well. It's not just here. It's leadership's response to a worldwide energy crisis is to punish the oil companies.
It's extraordinary because the energy crisis would not exist had Europe and the United States, to a lesser degree, gone pell-mell towards renewable energy and forgotten that 83% of the world's energy comes from fossil fuels. I mean, it's just virtue signaling, John. And yes, there are people who are seriously concerned about climate change, but you cannot enact a rapid fire transfer to renewable energy, which is unreliable and intermittent without very, very strong backup with fossil fuels. And leaders in the UK and the EU and America forgot that. And now all three regions, indeed the whole world, are suffering the consequences.
Within a week, the governor's races are a fascination. They're not getting major headlines. But when we come back, Elizabeth Peake has written of the governor's races, especially a few of them that are puzzlingly unpredictable. I'm John Batchelor.